For this week's parasha, it's parasha's Vayigash. The Haftorah is from Sefer Yechezkel. This part of Sefer Yechezkel is a nevuah about the Asad Lavoi, about the future, what will happen at the time of the coming of Mashiach. We'll come back to that shortly. Mitzvah Hashem. The Haftorah starts, the Haftorah is, for the most part, talks about the message that Hashem tells Yechezkel to send to the Jewish people, and is that unique, because one of the few places in the Nevi'im where the Navi is told by Hashem to not only to give over a message verbally, but to actually do an action, to do something, to bring across the message. So let's see. After you start, Vayhi Devar Hashem Eilai Leimor. Yechezkel says, the word of Hashem was to me saying, Ve'ata ven Adam, and you, son of man. Yechezkel, throughout the Sefer, is referred to as Ben Adam, son of man. The Chidah writes that the reason for that is because Yechezkel was a Gilgal, he was a reincarnation of Cain, the son of Adam HaRishayim. He was referred to as Ben Adam because he actually had the neshama, he had the soul of Cain, who was the son of Adam HaRishayim. So, Atan, you Ben Adam, son of man, kach lecha, take for yourself Eitz Echad, one tablet, one wooden tablet, uchasayv olav, and you should write on it, Lihuda v'livnei Yisrael chaveirov. Write on it for Yehuda and for the Vinei Yisrael, sons of Israel, Chaveirov, his friends, his colleagues. That's referring to Yehuda, the Shvatim of Yehuda and Binyamin, who are the kingdom in Yerushalayim, who are part of the kingdom in Yerushalayim. Ulekach Eitz Echad, and take one wooden tablet, Chasayv Olav, and write on it, LeYosef Eitz Ephraim V'chol Beis Yisrael Chaveirov. This tablet is for, represents Yosef, this wood is for Ephraim, and all the house of Israel, his friends and his colleagues. This is the tablet which represents the northern kingdom, the kingdom of Yisrael, the kingdom of the ten Shvatim. They're referred to as Ephraim, because the first king of the ten Shvatim was Yerovam ben Nevat, who came from Shevet Ephraim. So they're referred to as Ephraim. This second tablet represents Ephraim, who was the son of Yosef, and all of the ten Shvatim who were together with him in the northern kingdom and Eretz Yisrael. The Meshech Chachma observes, as you see, I highlighted the words, the highlight made them bold. When it comes to Yehuda, the term that's used is Yehuda v'levnei Yisrael chaveirov, the sons of Israel, his friends, his colleagues. However, when it comes to Ephraim, it says, V'chol Beis Yisrael Chaveirov, in the house of Israel, his friends, his colleagues. Why is that? So the Meshech Chachma writes that the Yehuda and Binyamin in the southern kingdom, in the kingdom of Yerushalayim, they conducted themselves, they acted like Bnei Yisrael, like males, like the males of the Jewish people. There's an obligation, there's a mitzvah for all the males to go up on the Shalosh Regalim, on the three Yom Tovim, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos, to go up to Yerushalayim, to be Oilu Regel, to appear in the Azara, in the Beis HaMikdash, and to bring Karbonos. And the Shvatim of Yehuda and Binyamin, they fulfilled that obligation. they were Oilu Regel, they went to the Beis HaMikdash three times a year on the Regalim. However, in the northern kingdom, Yerovam ben Nevat, he prevented the people from going to the Oilu Regel. And the Novi says in Melachim Aleph that Yerovam ben Nevat was very concerned if they were to come to the Beis HaMikdash and Rechavam ben Shloimoi, who was the king of the southern kingdom at the time, if they're both going to be there, Yerovam ben Nevat and Rechavam ben Shloimoi, they'll both be there in the Beis HaMikdash, then everyone would see clearly who the real king was. Why? The halacha is that Ein Yeshiva ba'azara elul malchim is David bilvad. One is not allowed to sit in the Azara. Everyone has to stand in the Azara, in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. Everyone is required to stand, except Malchei Beis David. Kings who are from the Davidic dynasty, who come from the family of David HaMelech, they have special permission to be able to sit in the Azara. So Yerovam ben Nevat said to himself, everyone's going to come to Yerushalayim, I'm going to be there, Rechavam is going to be there, Rechavam will be able to sit, because he's from the Malchus based David, but I'm going to be forced to stand, I won't be able to sit. Everyone will see clearly there that Rechavam is the real king, and I'll lose my entire following, I'll lose my entire kingdom. So Yerovam, instead, he put people, guards, to make sure no one went to the Eilu Regel, and instead he created two calves, and he created his own form of Aliyah L'Regel, the northern kingdom, to take the place of being Eilu Regel in Yerushalayim. So the ten Shvatim, the northern kingdom, they, from that point on, they weren't Eilu Regel. At least the majority of them were not Eilu Regel. They didn't go up to the Beis HaMikdash on Yom Tovim, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. So therefore, says Meshech Chochma, they're referred to as Beis Yisrael. Beis Yisrael is a term that's used often to refer to the women of Klal Yisrael, to refer to the women of Jewish people. Women have no obligation to go up to the Beis HaMikdash on the Yom Tovim. So therefore, the ten Shvatim who didn't fulfill their obligation to go up to Yerushalayim, to the Beis HaMikdash on the Yom Tovim, they conducted themselves, they acted like women, and therefore they're referred to as Beis Yisrael, the house of Israel, instead of as Bnei Yisrael. Pasuk Yud Zayin continues, V'korav oisom echod el echod l'chol le'etz echod. You should bring them close, one to the other, as if to make them into one piece of wood. V'hoyu la'achodim b'yodecha, and they will become one in your hand. Mitzuda says that there will actually be a miracle, and these two tablets of wood will turn into one tablet of wood. Hashem says, V'chasher yoimru eilecha b'nei amecha leimor. See, Yechezkel, you're going to go do this in the front of all the people. V'chasher yoimru eilecha, when they're going to say to you, b'nei amecha, the people of your nation, halei sagid lo numo eilelach. What's this all about? Please tell us, what are you doing? What does this mean? Daber aleihem. Speak to them. Koyomar Hashem eloikim. So said Hashem, Hine ani loikeach es eitz yoisei v'asher b'yad Ephraim v'shivte Yisrael chaveirov. I am taking this tablet of wood which represents Yosef and Ephraim and all of his colleagues, all of the ten Shvatim. V'nasati oisam, here it gets a little complicated, the wording of the pasuk. V'nasati, and I will place oisam them. Them is referring to the other ten Shvatim who are together with Ephraim. Olav, in addition to him, oisam is the other nine Shvatim besides for Ephraim. Olav, together with him, meaning with Ephraim, I'm going to place them as Eitz Yehuda, together with the wooden tablet of Yehuda, wooden tablet that represents Yehuda. V'asisim le'etz echad, I will make them into one piece of wood. V'hoyu echad miyadi, and there'll be one in my hand. V'hoyu ho'etzim asher tichtoy v'aleihem biyadcha le'ineihem. And those pieces of wood that you're going to write on them, they should be in your hands, in front of, in full of view of the people. V'daber aleihem, speak to them. Koyomar Hashem Elokim. So fine, explain to them what you're doing. You explain to them that you're taking one piece of wood that represents Ephraim and the ten Shvatim, and you have another piece of wood which represents Yehuda and Binyamin, and you're putting them together as one. Good. Then you explain what it is that you're doing. But now you have to explain, what does it mean? So you speak to them, Hashem says, I will take the Bnei Yisrael from amongst the nations that they've gone there. The and I'll gather them together from all around. And I will bring them to their land back to Eretz Yisrael. I will make them legoy echod ba'aretz. For one nation, as one nation in the land, Behara Yisrael, in the mountains of Israel. Umelech echod yilchulam lemelech. And there'll be one king. There was two kings. There were two kingdoms or two kings. But now, Umelech echod yilchulam lemelech. There will be only one king. There will be a king over them. Vlo yihyu oid l'shtei goyim. There will no longer be two nations. Vlo yichotzu oid l'shtei mamlochis oid. They will not be divided into two kingdoms anymore. They will no longer defile themselves with all their idols and all their despicable acts and their sins. and I will save them from wherever they are living, asher chatu bahem, the places they have sinned. I'll take them away, I'll extract them from all those places where they're living now in sin. V'tiharti oisam, I will purify them. V'hayu li la'am, and they'll be for me for a nation. V'ani yeheyeh lohem le'lokim, and I'll be a God for them. So the message that Hashem sends to the Yechezkel to the Jewish people is, first you're going to go through the motions, do this act of with the wood. You'll take the wood and write on one wood for Yehuda and his kingdom, and you write another piece of wood, Ephraim and his kingdom. You'll bring them together, they'll merge, they'll come together into one piece of wood. And you explain to the Jewish people that what the idea that is represented by this is that these two kingdoms of Yehuda and the ten Shvatim, which have been separated, which have been apart for so long, Hashem says the time will come, the time of the redemption, they'll come together and they'll form one nation, one unified nation, and they'll be all under one king, one kingdom, and they'll merge together to serve Hashem and to abandon all of their idolatry and all of their sins, and they'll come to serve Hashem as one in Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim. And that's the message of Yechezkel. Now we always have to ask, when we see the Haftarah, what's the connection between the Haftarah and the Parsha? And based on the Maharal in Netzach Yisrael, it seems his idea is the following. He doesn't exactly speak this out fully, but it seems that this is the idea. In Parshas Vayigash, we learn about the reunification of Yosef with his brothers, the reunion of Yosef with his brothers. And the truth is, if we go back, we'll see that there's a parallel, there's correspondence between the story of Yosef and his brothers and what would happen much later on, the story of the Ten Shvatim and Yehuda and Binyamin, the split of the kingdom of the Jewish people. We know Yosef and his brothers, things began with friction and quarreling between Yosef and his brothers. Yosef had his dreams, the brothers didn't like it. So it started off where there was friction between Yosef and his brothers. And that corresponds to the split, the divide between the Aseres HaShvatim and Yehuda and Binyamin. The times of Yerovam ben Nevat and Rechavam ben Shloimoi, when the northern kingdom split and went away from the southern kingdom of Yehuda and Binyamin, that corresponds to the division between Yosef and his brothers. Just as Yosef was separated from his brothers, there was division between them, there was machloikes, argument, and hatred between them, so too there was a split between the northern kingdom, the Ten Shvatim, and the southern kingdom of Yehuda Binyamin. They split away from each other into two different kingdoms, and there was animosity between them. There were wars constantly. If you learn the Navi, you'll see there was wars between them constantly. They were constantly going at each other. Next, we find that Yosef was sold down to Mitzrayim. He was sent away on his own, sent down to Mitzrayim. That represents, that corresponds to the exile of the Ten Shvatim. You know that before, the entire Jewish people were exiled from Eretz Yisrael. The Ten Shvatim of the Northern Kingdom were exiled, they were sent out of Eretz Yisrael. Just as Yosef was sold and sent away from his brothers, so too the Aseres HaShvatim later on, the Ten Shvatim of the Northern Kingdom were sent away, they were exiled before the Southern Kingdom, while Yehuda and Binyamin were still living in Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim. And the Maharal makes a point of saying that just as, if you think about it, Hashem miraculously perhaps orchestrated that Yaakov and his sons should not know the whereabouts of Yosef. Maral says, if you think about it, Yosef really wasn't very far from them. Yosef was in Mitzrayim. Yaakov and his family were in Eretz Yisrael. They're not that far from each other. So how is it over 22 years they didn't find out about this? They didn't have people traveling from Mitzrayim saying, you know, there's a new second in command, you hear about it, the slave who came from Eretz Yisrael, no, nothing, they had no clue, no idea that he was in Mitzrayim. So Maral says it's clear that Hashem wanted it to be that way, and therefore, although naturally they should have found out about it, Hashem made it that they should never find out, they should never know that Yosef was not too far away from them in Mitzrayim. says, so too, when it came to the galus of the Aseres Hashvatim, the exile of the Aseres Hashvatim, the northern kingdom, the 10 tribes of the northern kingdom, which corresponds to the sale of Yosef down to Mitzrayim, so too there, the whereabouts, the location of his Aseres Hashvatim is not known. It's not clear. There's some mention in the Gemara of where they were exiled to. Not very clear, not very specific. Different people in various times in history have made expeditions to try to find them. But says the Maharal, Hashem intentionally made it just as Hashem didn't want Yaakov and his sons to know where Yosef was, so too Hashem made it that the Jewish people should not know what happened to the Aseres Hashvatim. They were exiled, they're gone, we don't know their whereabouts, and that's the way that Hashem wants it to be. Then we come to Parshas Vayigash. In Parshas Vayigash, Yaakov, Yosef, and his brothers are reunited. And there the Pasuk says, we learned this Pasuk, we didn't learn this Pasuk in the Parsha this week, but the Pasuk says, it's on, in the source sheet on page 2, source number 2, and it's the Medrash means the Pasuk, Vayitin es koyli b'vchi, when Yosef revealed his identity to his brothers, Vayitin es koyli b'vchi, Yosef raised his voice and he cried. And the Medrash says, "Kishem shlei piyes Yosef es echov el b'vchiya." Just as Yosef, he appeased his brothers when he revealed his identity to them, and he wanted to calm them down, console them. So he did so with b'vchiya, with crying. Kach Hakadosh Baruch Hu einay goyel es Yisrael el mitoch b'vchiya. So too, when Hashem redeems the Jewish people, it's going to be with crying. Shenemar, the Medrash quotes the pasuk in Yirmiyahu, which is source number 3. It says, "Bivchi avoyu v'sachanunim oyvilein." Bivchi avoyu, they will come back with weeping, v'sachanunim oyvilein, and with supplications. Oyvilein, I will lead them back. Oylichem el nachalei mayim b'derech yoshar lo yikashlu ba. I will lead them along streams of water. In a b'derech yashar, in a straight, direct way, lo yikashlu ba, that they won't stumble. Ki hayisi li Yisrael la'av, as I am for Yisrael, father of Ephraim b'chayrihu, and Ephraim is my firstborn. So the reunion of Yosef and his brothers, which the pasuk says vayitin es koyli b'vchi, that at the time there was Yosef cried, the Medrash clearly links these two events: the reunion of Yosef and his brothers, and the geula, the redemption of the Jewish people. And the Maharal points out that the end of the pasuk indicates that this pasuk is talking about Ephraim. As we mentioned before, Ephraim represents the 10 shvatim of the northern kingdom. So the Maharal says this pasuk is talking about not just the redemption of the Jewish people, it's specifically referring to the return of the Aseres HaShvatim of the 10 shvatim. And this pasuk makes a correspondence between the reunion of Yosef with his brothers and the return of the Aseres HaShvatim. And says Maharal, that's the next step in the sequence of events of this correspondence between the events that took place between Yosef and his brothers and the events of Lasid Lavoi, by the future redemption, when the reunification of the Jewish people. This is the next stage. The next stage is just that the Medrash makes the correspondence, equates Yosef's reunion with his brothers to the Ephraim, to the 10 shvatim coming back and rejoining the Jewish people. The Maharal says as well, in a different place, in a different sefer, in Gur Aryeh, he says on the Pasuk, when the Pasuk says that that when Yosef encountered Binyamin, at this time when Yosef revealed his identity, so it says that Yosef fell on Binyamin's shoulders. That they fell on each other's shoulders. And the Maharal says, and they fell on each other's shoulders and they cried. Rashi says, why did they cry? They were crying over the destruction of the Bate Mikdash that would happen later on, destruction of the Mishkan and the Bate Mikdash, which would happen later on. So the Maharal says that why were they crying then about the Beis HaMikdash? And the Maral explains, in Gur Aryeh, the Maral explains that it was more than just representative of the structure of the Bate Mikdash. There was more to it. the reunion, the Yosef and Binyamin understood that their reunion now was represented, the reunion of the northern kingdom, which is represented by Ephraim, who comes from Yosef, and the southern kingdom, the kingdom of Yehuda and Binyamin, which is the southern kingdom, which will happen by the Gula Hasida, by the future redemption, and at which time the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom will come back together. Yosef and Binyamin were crying because they understood that this moment was representative of the reunion that would happen later on between Yosef's children, the northern kingdom represented by Ephraim, and the southern kingdom, which was Yehuda and Binyamin. This reunion of Yosef and Binyamin was Maisa Avos, Simon Labanim, represented what would happen later on, the reunification of the two kingdoms of the Jewish people. So this Pasha, which talks about the reunion of Yosef and his brothers, represents the reunification of the two parts, the two segments of Klal Yisrael, which would happen later on, which is what the prophecy over here of Yechezkel is talking about. Yechezkel, the prophecy of Yechezkel over here is that the Aseres HaShvatim, the 10 tribes represented by Ephraim, will be reunited with the southern kingdom of Yehuda and Binyamin, the Asadova in the future. And that corresponds to the reunion between Yosef and his brothers, which is spoken about in the parasha, and therefore this Haftarah is very appropriate, it fits very well with the events that took place in the parasha.
How did the kingdoms remain divided when the northern kingdom, the people in the northern kingdom, were fully aware of the commands of the Torah and the fact that the temple stood and that they had obligations that they must fulfill? And yet they just on the order of the king, they didn't perform the mitzvahs to God.
The first thing you have to understand is that Yerovam ben Nevat, although he sinned greatly and caused other people to sin, he wasn't some lowlife what we call a loser. If you look at the Gemara in Sanhedrin, he was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. He knew his stuff, and he was presumably he was dramatic and persuasive, and he had what to back him up. You know, it was like. I guess the Havdil, you have the old time conservative rabbis who some of them were very learned and they knew their stuff and they knew how to present it in such a way that it was very convincing. So Yochanan ben Nevat was a big Talmud Chacham. Perhaps he was dramatic and persuasive and he was a good orator and he was able to convince people of what he wanted to convince them of. Perhaps. The Ramban wrote actually many more Svarim than we might be familiar with. The Ramban wrote a Sefer called Sefer HaGe'ula. One of the things that are discussed, one of the topics that are discussed in the Ramban and Sefer HaGe'ula is the Ramban writes that the Leutrim, the Christians, claimed that many of the Nevi'im, many of the prophecies that we find in the Nevi'im were referring to the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. They're referring to, and talks about Geula, redemption, talking about after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, when the Jewish people were exiled to Bavel. So the Nevi'im, to talk about redemption, they're talking about the redemption from that exile coming back from Bavel and rebuilding the second Beis HaMikdash. And the Ramban goes to great lengths to prove that it's not the case. That many of these Nevuahs are actually talking about the Asad Bavel in the future after our current goals, after our current exile, when we brought back to Eretz Yisrael, rebuild the third Beis HaMikdash. And one of the proofs that the Ramban brings is from our Haftarah, from this section of Sefer Yechezkel. So the first point that the Ramban makes is that we see in this Nevuah of Yechezkel What does he say? He says that there'll be a reunification of the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. That the ten Shvatim were exiled, they'll come back, and they will be unified. They will come together with the southern kingdom of Yehuda and Benjamin, and they will all be ruled by one king from the Malchus Beis David. Actually, the Psukim later on say that David Avdi, that Hashem says, David, my servant, will rule over them. That the king over the Jewish people then will be David HaMelech. So says the Ramban, it's very clear in this Nevuah, this prophecy of Yechezkel, that the ten Shvatim will come back, and that there will be one nation altogether, both the former northern kingdom and southern kingdom will come together as one nation under David HaMelech. Says the Ramban, that clearly did not take place at the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, when the Jewish people came back from Bavel. The ten Shvatim didn't return at that time. There was no reunification under one king. It never happened. That's first of all. Second of all, the Psukim later on say as well that the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt at that time, and that it will last, the Olam, it will last forever. Says the Ramban, if you want to tell me that we know that the second Beis HaMikdash didn't last forever, it was destroyed. So perhaps you'll tell me that it was originally meant to last forever, but then the Jewish people sinned and had to be destroyed. Says the Ramban, that can't be the case either. If you look at the Sefer Daniel, you'll see it says clearly that there'll be an end to the second Beis HaMikdash. The second Beis HaMikdash was never intended to be forever. It was clearly temporary. So says the Ramban, this Nevuah of Yechezkel can't possibly be referring to the return of the Jewish people after the Babylonian exile to build the second Beis HaMikdash. It's clear that this Nevuah here of Yechezkel is talking about a future redemption which will rebuild the third Beis HaMikdash, and that third Beis HaMikdash will last forever. So what we see from the Ramban, and really what we see from the Psukim in the Haftarah as well, is that a time will come when the Aseres HaShvatim, when the ten tribes of the northern kingdom will come back. They'll come back and rejoin the Jewish people. That is very clear. Now this presents a problem. Take a look at source number 4, on page 3 of the source sheets. There's a Mishnah in Maseches Sanhedrin. And the Mishnah quotes a Machloikis between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Lezer. Let's read it inside. Aseres HaShvatim, the 10 tribes, number 4 on page number 3. Aseres HaShvatim, the 10 tribes, Einon Asidin Lachzor. They are not destined to come back. They're not destined to come back. Shenemar, it says, Ve'ashlichem el eretz acheres, and he threw them away to a different land, kayoim hazeh, like this day. What does it mean, kayoim hazeh, like this day? Ma hayoim, just as the day, hoylech ve'enoy chayzer, the day, once it passes, it's gone, and it doesn't come back. Afheim, also them, those who were thrown away, the aseres hashvatim, who were exiled and thrown out of Eretz Yisrael, Holchim ve'enon chayzer. They'll go, and ve'enon chayzer, they're not going to come back. Divi Rebbe Kiva, those words Rebbe Kiva. Rebbe Kiva's opinion is that Seres HaShvatim, the ten Shvatim, they were exiled, they were sent away, and Kayoim HaZeh, just as the day, once it's gone, it's gone. So too, the Seres HaShvatim, once they were thrown out and they were exiled, they're gone, they will not come back. Divi Rebbe Kiva, those are the words Rebbe Kiva. Rebbe Eliezer, Oimer. Rebbe Eliezer has a different, more positive approach. Kayoim hazeh. What does it mean? Like this day, he threw them. Ashlichem eretz acheres. He threw them to a different land. Kayoim hazeh. Like this day, ma yoim ma afilu meir. Just as the day, it's dark and gets lighter. Afaseres hashvatim. So to the ten tribes. Shafeilu lohem. They're right now dark for them. They were exiled. They were sent away. Kach asidu lohoyer lohem. Just like the day gets lighter, so too the things will get lighter. Things will get better for the aseres hashvatim. For the ten tribes of the northern kingdom, they will be returned, they will come back and rejoin the Jewish people. So we have a machloikas. Rabbi Kiva says that ten shvatim, the ten tribes of the northern kingdom, they will not come back. Rabbi Eliezer says they will. The problem is that we have a clear nevuah from Yechezkel, which indicates that the aseres hashvatim, the ten tribes, will come back. Where is there any room for there to be a machloikas, an argument between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Eliezer about whether the ten shvatim, the ten tribes, will rejoin the Jewish people or not? If there's an explicit pasuk in Yechezkel, it's a clear nevuah from Yechezkel. He says the Eitz Ephraim will be rejoined, they'll come back together with the Eitz Yehuda, and that I'm going to take the Bnei Yisroel and Bnei Agoyim, kibach the Yisroel Misavev, bring them all back together. They're going to be one nation under one king. It's a clear prophecy. The Ramban makes it very clear to us. It's talking about the ten Shvatim and Yehuda will be rejoined together. So how can there be a machlokes about something that's a clear nevuah, a clear prophecy in Yechezkel? How can there be a machlokes about that? So one answer that's suggested by some Rishonim, that this machlokes is not about whether they'll rejoin the Jewish people in the times of Mashiach. It's referring to the those from the Aseres HaShvatim who were present, those who were actually actual Aseres HaShvatim who were actually exiled from Eretz Yisrael. It's a question about whether they'll have a portion of Olam Haba or they won't. Chozrim means whether they'll have a portion of Olam Haba. Einon Chozrim means they won't have a portion of Olam Haba. That's one approach from some Rishonim, Maseches Sanhedrin. But there are others who say that it means like it means literally like it says, like it sounds. Chozrim or Einon Chozrim means will they rejoin the Jewish people in the times of Mashiach or not? The Maharal addresses this question in Netzach Yisrael. It's number 5, no, source number 5 on the source sheet. He makes another point as well. He says that it can't be that in the times of Mashiach there'll be some of the Shvatim will be missing, that the Jewish people will consist of only 2 Shvatim in the times of Mashiach. This question is addressed in Radvaz as well, and the Shalos Tshuvos Radvaz, the response of the Radvaz. And the Shoyal, the one who asked the question, he says, how could it be? We know that the completion of the Jewish people is when the 12 tribes correspond to the 12 constellations and the 12 months, that the completion of Jewish people is with 12 tribes. How could it be? How could Rabbi Akiva have this opinion that the Aseres HaShvatim and the 10 tribes will not come back in times of Mashiach? How could it be that the Jewish people were lacking? The language of the Maharal is she'ein loymar she'yeh choser shevet echon Yisrael chas v'sholim. It can't be that there'll be any even one tribe of Jewish people missing. Such a thing is unfathomable. It can't be. So what's the solution? So the Maharal says that the answer really lies in the Gemara Maseches Megillah. The Gemara Maseches Megillah, it's the middle of a discussion of who the 7 Nevi'ahs were, who were the 7 female prophets who prophesied for the Jewish people. And the Gemara is discussing Chulda HaNevi'ah. And there's a question over there why Chulda was approached by the king, Yoshiyahu. King Yoshiyahu, he approached Chulda. He wanted to hear what she had to say, B'nevuah. And the Gemara asks the question, why did Yoshiyahu go to Chulda HaNevi'ah if Yirmiyahu HaNovi was alive at the time? And one of the things that the Gemara says is that at the time, Yirmiyahu was busy, he was out of town. Because Yirmiyahu had gone to bring back the Aseres HaShvatim. Presumably, Yirmiyahu HaNovi didn't bring back the entire Aseres HaShvatim, but he brought back some representation of the Aseres HaShvatim at that time. The Gemara says that Yirmiyahu brought back the Aseres HaShvatim, or approves it from various psukim, which indicate that there had to have been a time when some of the Aseres HaShvatim were back in Eretz Yisrael. Various psukim, without getting into the technicalities, there are various psukim which indicate that the entire Jewish people were in Eretz Yisrael at some point after, or at least representation of the entire Jewish people was present in Eretz Yisrael at the certain times after the exile of the 10 Shvatim. So the Maharal and others, the Radvaz, say that this is the solution. The 10 Shvatim, Aseres HaShvatim, they were exiled. They were sent away. And Yirmiyahu went, and presumably there were some righteous among them. And Yirmiyahu went and he brought representatives of each of those 10 Shvatim back to Eretz Yisrael. And they no longer had a very large representation. They were no longer still a large group to have their own kingdom. But they sort of mixed in amongst Yehuda and Binyamin, the Jewish people who were remaining in Eretz Yisrael. And when Yehuda and Binyamin were exiled later on, they were exiled with them. Says the Maharal, certainly those who were returned by Yirmiyahu, there's no question about that. They, or actually their children, their descendants of those who came back to Eretz Yisrael, with Yirmiyahu HaNavi, certainly they will come back at the time of the Geula, together with the rest of us, maybe some of us are from them, will come back to Eretz Yisrael at the time of the coming of Mashiach, at the time of the redemption, they'll come back to Eretz Yisrael. So indeed, they'll be from the Aseret HaShvatim, as is clear in Yechezkel, and there will be the all 12 Shvatim will be there, so you can have the completion of the Jewish people. The question is only about those who didn't come back with Yirmiyahu. The machlokes, the discussion between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Eliezer, that's about the others from Aseret HaShvatim, who were not brought back by Yirmiyahu. So the question is, will they come back in the time of Mashiach or not? Rabbi Kiva says, no, they're gone, finished. Once they were exiled, that was the end of it. Rabbi Eliezer says, no, even them, they will eventually, their descendants will come back in the times of Mashiach. So we have that the Nevuah in Yechezkel, which talks about the Aseret HaShvatim and Yehuda and Binyamin rejoining, coming back together as one kingdom, as one nation under one king. That, according to the Maharal and the Radvaz, is referring to those representatives of the Aseret HaShvatim who have been brought back by Yirmiyahu HaNavi shortly after their exile. The Machlokes, the discussion in Maseches Sanhedrin about whether the Aseret HaShvatim will come back or not, that's referring to those who were not brought back by Yirmiyahu. There's a machlokes between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Eliezer about whether they will eventually return and join the Jewish people or not.
I've actually read a lot of the Tanakh, and it's like and it's just either Sefer Melachim or it's the Divrei Yemer, or both, where Asher Exar is actually the 10 lost tribes, right? But apparently some actually remained, and Chizkiyahu takes advantage of the weakness of Asher, and he takes over the former territory of the 10 lost tribes, right? And he makes a decree that everybody has to be observing in a Pesach, right? Coming down the base of Mikdash, and it says that the decree actually went all the way up, and that some actually members of the lost tribes actually were busy actually laughing their head off. But as I said, some actually never left, and some actually became Bali Chum and went down, right? And then as far as in the book of Ezra, it mentions Ezra bringing some members of lost tribes over, so...
Okay, you could show me afterwards.
Oh, so I was wondering actually...
You could show me afterwards, we'll talk about it.
Why it's not brought over...
You could show me afterwards, we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
I want to focus for a minute back on the machlokes between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Eliezer have an interesting machlokes. The machlokes fundamentally is about the Aseret HaShvatim, about the 10 Shvatim, 10 tribes, whether they'll be come back or not, whether that's referring to Elam Abba, whether that's referring to the times of Mashiach, the entire 10 Shvatim, or just those who didn't come back with Yirmiyahu. Okay, we already discussed that. But they have a machlokes about how to understand the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, "Vayashlichem al eretz acheres," they were thrown away to a different land, "Kayoim hazeh," like this day. And the machlokes between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Eliezer had to understand what "Kayoim hazeh" means. "Kayoim hazeh," like this day, had to understand what that means. Rabbi Kiva on one hand says that just as the day it goes and it doesn't come back, so too the Aseret HaShvatim, the 10 tribes, holchem, they go back and they don't. They went and they're not going to come back. And Rabbi Eliezer says, no. Kayoim hazeh, like this day, he says the day, it's darker, it gets lighter. There's a number of different explanations of what that means. Either it means that in the morning it's dark, and then it gets light later as the day progresses. Or it means that even though it might be dark here right now, but the sun's coming back around, it'll make its way back around, and the sun will come back up again and be light again. Rabbi Eliezer says, no, kayoim hazeh means like this day, that the day goes in cycles, and even though it's dark, it gets lighter again. And what's at the root here? What's at the root of this machlokes about how to understand Kayim Hazeh like this day? Why is the machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Kiva seems to all be based on this understanding of Kayim Hazeh? And I think we could explain it in the following way. If we look at day and night, we'll see what's day all about. The day is about creativity. It's about activity. It's a time when people are active, people are productive, People are creative about accomplishment and doing things, going out, there's lots to do and lots to accomplish during the day. That's what the day, when you think about day, people go out to work, people go coming and going and buying and selling and so on and so forth. During the day is a time when there's activity, when there's accomplishment. Day is a time of doing things. That's what the day is. When it comes to the night, what's the night all about? So there's actually two ways that one can look at the nighttime. The nighttime is dark, or at least it was until a couple hundred years ago. Nighttime was dark. It was dark. So nighttime can be looked at as what we call dead time. Dead, what are you going to do? It's dark, nothing to do. Okay, so, you know, we could sit and eat and drink and sleep, sleep during the winter months when the night is very long, so we could sleep many hours. That's one way to look at the night. Listen, the day is good, it's light, we can do things, we can accomplish things, we can go and come, there's a lot to do, there's a lot to get done. But the nighttime, it's dead time, it's dark, it's quiet, there's nothing to do. So, we'll just pass the time with whatever we happen to do, whatever we can find ourselves to do, we'll do, and then we'll wait for it to get light again. But there's another way to look at the night. We could look at the night is a time of rejuvenation. The night is a time that we could use to recharge our batteries. Night is a time of quiet, time we could think about things and contemplate things. We're not busy with being active and productive. Night is a time, there's a lot that can be done in the night. The night is a time of quiet, of peace, tranquility. It's a time for rejuvenation. And if you think about it, why did Hashem have to make the world in such a way that we have to sleep at night? Why don't we just make it, go straight, 24/7, 365, we'll just go straight. There's an importance to being able to stop. It's a time for refreshing ourselves. We know, I'm sure we've all had bad days sometimes, and the night is very helpful in putting an end to the day and giving us a chance to recharge, to rejuvenate ourselves, refresh ourselves. We go to sleep, we wake up in the morning, and it's a new day. The night presents tremendous opportunities for a person, besides for the fact that there's quiet and there's time, and the Rambam writes in Hilchos Talmud Torah that the night is a special time for learning Torah. We're supposed to learn Torah by day and by night, but during the night it's especially important. Because during the night, there's not as much to do. During the night it's quiet, it's a time when we could think and focus, we could concentrate. So the night's an ideal time for learning Torah. So there's two ways we can look at the night time. One could look at the night time as just wasted time. There's nothing to do at night. During the day we could do things at night, there's nothing to do. It's just dead time, there's nothing to do with it. Or we could look at the night as a time of growth, as a time of rejuvenation, contemplation, of refreshing and recharging ourselves and getting ourselves ready for the next day. We could look at the night as a preparation for the next day, as a way of getting ourselves ready for the next day. And truth is, the same applies in the Jewish calendar. The Jewish calendar, if you look at the Jewish calendar, you'll see that really the majority of the Yom Tovim take place within about 6 months, give or take a week or two. If you go from the beginning of Pesach to the end of Sukkot, you have within that time Pesach and Shavuos and Elul and Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Sukkot. It's all packed in to half the year. And then you get after Sukkot until Pesach is another 6 months, sometimes even more, leap year. And that's all that time. There's no Yom Deraisa, Yom Tovim, there's Chanukah, important. There's no real Yom Tovim in our Torah. It's quiet. And that is perhaps representative of the day and the night. You have the time from Pesach until Sukkot. That's the daytime. That's the time when we're active, when we're creative, we're doing things, we're involved with Pesach. There's all sorts of activities that we do on Pesach, we're eating matzah, and we're getting rid of the chametz, and we're leaning, and we're dipping, and we're drinking wine, and there's Shavuos, stay up all night learning, and then you get the Elul, and Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, constantly blowing shofar, we're doing things, we're very active, very productive, very creative in that time of the year. Then we get there after Sukkot, things slow down, Things quiet down. And we could look at that year, okay, this is the time of year, we'll just get through it until we get to the next Yom Tif. Okay, what are you going to do? There's nothing too exciting. Okay, it's kind of important, but not as exciting as the real Yom Tif. And it also is representative, there's two times of the year, there's times when we're supposed to be active, we're supposed to be creative, but we can't keep on going like that the whole year, year after year. There's times when we need to be more active. There's times when we have to accomplish more things. And then there's times, we need times of quiet, times of contemplation, times to recharge our batteries, times for personal growth, to study Torah, to be involved in perfecting ourselves, involved in improving ourselves quietly, not very loud, not very visible on the outside, but just quietly. And that's the other time of year. There's a time of year, Pesach, the Sukkot, all that time is lots of activity, lots going on outwardly. Lots of activity, lots of creativity. And then there's another time of year between Sukkot and Pesach where things are quieter, where it's more of an opportunity to reflect, to think about our lives. We're not so busy with all different preparations and different Yom Tovim. It's quieter. It's more of an opportunity to recharge ourselves, to improve ourselves, to get ourselves ready for the next set of Avodah, the next set of service of Hashem that takes place on the Yom Tovim. And it's no coincidence that these two sections of the year correspond to the different seasons. You get to Pesach. Pesach is the time when the grass is starting to grow, the trees are starting to bloom. In Nisan, we say the Brichas Eilom, it's broken on the trees. That's when things are starting to sprout, to come out, to be active, to be energetic. And that goes from Pesach and Shavuos till we get to Sukkot. At Sukkot, and as Sukkot ends, we start to see the winter approaching. And that's the nights get longer, the days get shorter. These two times of year, it's no coincidence that it corresponds with those with the different seasons of the year. As Pesach comes, the days are getting longer. As Sukkot passes, the days are getting shorter, the nights are getting longer. And thus, it's representative of the day and the night, the time of the Eraisa, the Minatayr Yom Tovim, and the other parts of the year, and the winter months and the summer months, and they all have the same idea. And the idea is that there are times for activity and productivity, for energy, for outward avodas Hashem, for those kinds of things. And then there are other times, the rest of the time is not meant to be wasted away. It's not meant to just relax and sit back until the next until it's time for the next dose of avodas Hashem, or the next dose of work and creativity and activity. It's a time that's meant for preparation. It's a time that's meant for contemplation, to think about things, to prepare ourselves, to grow within ourselves internally, not externally, internally, to get ourselves ready for the next Avodas Hashem, to get us ready for the next day, to get ourselves ready for the next season. Even during the winter months, when the trees look bare and there's nothing on them, really in the roots, in the insides of the tree, things are getting ready for the spring, things are moving along and progressing, things are developing for the tree later on in the spring to grow leaves, to grow fruits. Things are going on, you might not see it, but even during the winter months, there's things are going on, the tree is preparing itself for the next season. And that's how ideally we should look at the nighttime, look at the winter months as well. It's not a time, it's not wasted time, it's not time that's meant to sit back and waste away. It's a time for preparation, and a time for introspection, for contemplation, to grow ourselves, to get ourselves ready for the next day, for the next time of the year. And that's what we have in Machlokes Rebbe Akiva and Rebbe Elazar. What does it mean, Kayoim Hazeh? The Torah says that it will throw them away, Kayoim Hazeh. What does that mean, Kayoim Hazeh? What kind of Kayoim Hazeh? Rebbe Akiva says it's the Kayoim Hazeh of the day come, the day passes, and the night comes, and it's over. The day passed, the day is finished, now it's nighttime. It's over. There's no remnant of the day left. Rebbe Elazar says, no, that's not the Kayim Hazeh. The Kayim Hazeh that it's talking about is the Kayim Hazeh which says that the night, the darkness, it's just a preparation. It's just preparation for the next day. It's a time for rejuvenation. It's a time for getting ready and preparing for the next day. The Kayim Hazeh that's being spoken about, according to Rebbe Elazar, is the way that we should, a proper perspective on the nighttime, on the winter months, and the darker time of the year, when we have to view it as with the potential that there is for rejuvenating ourselves, re-energizing ourselves, and getting ourselves ready from what will come afterwards, come the next time of the part of the year, and then the next day. If you look back at Pasuk Chaf Aleph, Pasuk says, Hashem tells Yechezkel that he should explain to the Jewish people the meaning of what he was doing with the wooden tablets, bringing them together. He says, "Dabri aleihem kuyamar Hashem aleikim." Should speak to them. Should say, "So says Hashem, Hini ani loikeach es bnei Yisrael mibein agoyim asher holchu sham. I will take the Jewish people from amongst the nations that they have gone there. V'kibatz the oisam misaviv. I'll gather them together. V'heidesi oisam al admosam. I'll bring them to their land." Then subsequently in Pasuk Chaf Beis, that's where Hashem says, then Hashem says, "I'll make them into one nation in the land, in the mountains of Yisrael, and they'll have one king." They'll have one king and there'll be one nation. So the Chidah writes in his Sefer Nachal Soirek, he says that we see that there's two steps. The first step is Hashem says, "I'll gather all Jewish people together. Kibatz the oisam, I'll take them and I'll gather them together and bring them to the land." Then, after that, Hashem says, "Then I'll make them into one nation and give them one king." Says the Chidah, we know that the Jewish people were sent into Galus, were sent into exile. Why? Because of Sinas Chinam. Because there was baseless hatred, because there was pirud, separation. The Jewish people were not united, they didn't come together with Achdus. Says the Chidah, therefore Hashem makes it very clear that the prerequisite for the Geula, the prerequisite for the redemption, when the Jewish people could come back to be one nation with one king, is the Kibatz Yisam. Hashem says they have to be gathered together, they have to come back together with unity. Then, Hashem says, only then could there be redemption, only then could there be the Geula. And I was thinking, if you look at the Pasuk, there's really two ways that the Pasuk could have expressed itself. Pasuk says, Hashem says, "I'm going to take the Jewish people..." Could have said, from the lands where they were exiled. Right? Where the Jewish people exiled? They were exiled, they were sent to Eretz Yisrael, to other lands. So the Pasuk could have said, "I will take the Jewish people from the lands where they are and bring them back to their land." And the Pasuk ends, Hashem says, "I'll bring them back. I'll bring them to their land." If Hashem is going to say, I'm going to bring them to their land, so the beginning of the Pasuk should say, "I'll take them from the lands where they are and bring them to their land." But the Pasuk doesn't say that. The Pasuk says, "I will take them from amongst the nations that they have gone there, and I'll gather them and bring them to their land." So why doesn't the Pasuk say, "I'll gather them from the lands that they went to and bring them to their land, bring them from that land to this land"? Instead, the Pasuk says, "Bring them from the nations to their land, from the nations where they were exiled to their land." So I was thinking that perhaps there's actually a message over here in the Pasuk. And when we talk about the galus, the exile, the Jewish people were exiled because of sinas chinam, because of baseless hatred, because they lacked unity, they lacked achdus. What was the cause? Why? What brought them to have sinas chinam? What prevented them from having unity, from having achdus? And Chaim Friedlander in the Sifsei Chaim addresses this question. And he says that the answer can be found in the Shari Tshuva from Rabbeinu Yoino, which is source number 6 on the page. Rabbeinu Yoino says in the Shari Tshuva, he's talking about one of the fundamental steps of doing Tshuva. And he says that ninth prerequisite for Tshuva is Shviras Hatav HaGashmis. A person has to break his physical desires. And he speaks about it at great length. And the Rabbeinu Yoino quotes a pasuk in Mishlei. Pasuk in Mishlei says, "Latavo yivakish nifrod, b'chol tushia yisgalo." Pasuk says, "Latavo yivakish nifrod." Nifrod, someone who separates himself. "Latavo yivakish," he seeks his own desires.
Hold on 1 minute, please.
So Rabbeinu Yoino says, the possible Savo Yivakesh Nifrod. Pasuk means that the Nifron, one who separates himself, Asav or Yivakesh, he seeks his own desire. Says Rabbi Yoino, Perushai, what does that mean? It says, Mi shebevakesh lo leches achar ta'avosu yiritzoinoi. Someone who desires to go after his desires and his own will, Nifrad mikol chever ve'omis. He will separate himself from every friend, mikol chover, from any friend, ve'omis, and colleague. Ki yichaku mimenu oyiv v'reya. Because those who he loves, those who he is friends with, they'll distance themselves from him. When a person seeks his own, the fulfillment of his own desires, then he'll lose his friends and he'll lose his colleagues. Ki savas b'ni odom midoisam chalukos. Because the desires of each person and their natures, chalukos, are different from each other. Ein ritzoinu shel zeh ki ritzoinu shel zeh. No two people have the same wills and the same desires. Everyone wants something else. When it comes to taivos, the physical desires, everyone has their own interests in mind and everyone wants different things. Says Rabbeinu Yoino, what leads to pirud, to separation between people, is when people are looking out for their own taivis, for their own physical, to fulfill their own physical desires, to fulfill their own taivis. That's what brings separation between people. When a person is a focus, he's looking out to fulfill his desires, and it'll cause friction, it'll cause fighting and separation between people. Each person wants to do what's for his own benefit, each person wants something different, and inevitably there'll be arguments, there'll be fights about how each person can fulfill his own wills and his own desires.
Yeah, but I was just mentioning, as we get older, Tyler, we were more accepting of what we have. We draw more joy from the things that we have, like our grandchildren or whatever. There's less conflict between ourselves and our brothers and sisters because we all seem to be on the plane of God gave us this, Baruch Hashem, we're very happy.
Okay.
So when you're younger, it's more difficulty.
Okay, that could be true. I mean, I can only speak from being who I am, where I am, but I know there were definitely great people who were very concerned and very cautious, that even at very advanced ages, they were very concerned about their desires, they're very, very concerned about it. Okay, I know each person has his own lot, each person has his own thing, so good. If you don't feel it's a challenge for you, then good for you.
However, on the other side, though, let's say she has, as far as actually spiritual growth, right? So a younger person, she's more likely, I'll change my ways, right? Or do, right? Whereas it becomes a bit more of a challenge either for some older person. It's like, let's say, as far as actually Bali Chuba, right? If someone's an older person, right? If someone, you want me to give up the way of the
Shiva
all these years?
That's true. We actually spoke that. We listened to the Shiva from Pasha's, was it Vayeshev? I think we spoke about that. Okay? You didn't come that week. You would have come. You would have heard it. So the Chaim Friedlander says, we see from the Prim Beinu Yoino, what's the cause of argument? What's the cause of separation amongst people? It's when people are focusing, their focus is on the fulfillment of their desires. So it says Chaim Friedlander, if our focus is on Avodas Hashem, we look at whatever we do in terms of how it fits in with our Avodas Hashem, how we can serve Hashem. So then our own desires, our own interests, take a back seat. That's not the focus. It doesn't play a major role in our decision making and the way we conduct ourselves. What's important is how everything fits in the context of our service of Hashem. And then our own interests, our own desires, don't play a major role. And that brings unity between people. If everyone is focused on the same goal of how we could serve Hashem best, and we're not, our own interests and our own desires don't take a front seat, they're a primary part of our considerations, so then that is what could bring unity amongst people. If we're focusing on our own desires, our own interests, that brings separation. But if we look at things and we focus on how what we do fits in with Avodas Hashem, and everyone's focused on the same goal of doing what's best for Avodas Hashem, then that's what brings unity and the connection between people. So he says that when the Jewish people are in exile, and we're amongst other nations, and we're influenced by them, inevitably, as we spoke about previously, it's the nature of a person, we're affected by our surroundings. So as long as we're in exile, or amongst other nations, we're affected by their interests, we're affected by their ideals, we're affected by what's important to them. So as long as we're influenced by the other nations, then our interests and our desires, just as for them, it plays an important role and it's a focus of their lives, it becomes part of our focus as well. When we live amongst other nations who focus on materialism, who focus on fulfilling their own desires, who only focus on fulfilling their own desires, then inevitably we're affected by that. And we also come to think about and to be focused on our own desires. And that's what brings separation amongst the Jewish people. When we're influenced by other nations to focus on our own personal wills and desires, then we become selfish people, and then inevitably there's pain with the separation between the Jewish people, and there's lacks achdus. When we're able to focus completely, to ignore the nations around us, we're able to focus completely on Avodas Hashem and make our decisions and run our lives based on how it fits in with Avodas Hashem, that's what brings unity amongst the Jewish people. So he says, that's what the Gemara tells us, that Haman, when he spoke to Achashverosh about the Jewish people, there was no one who knew how to speak Lashon Hara like Haman. Haman, he wanted to bring a kitchurug. He wanted to bring heavenly prosecution against the Jewish people. So that's what the Gemara explains, that Haman said to Achashverosh, it's on page number 4, source number 7, he says, Yeshno yamechon mefuzer mefayrod ben ha'amin. Haman said to Achashverosh, he was trying to as well, in addition to speaking to Achashverosh, he was also trying to bring, accuse them in front of Hashem as well. He says that, they're mefuzer mefayrod, they're spread out. They lack unity. They're not all together. There's no achdus, there's peiro, there's separation, there's quarreling and argument and fighting. Says B'chaim Friedlander, why does the pasuk say the mefuzer mefayrod bein ha'amin? Why does it say they're spread out amongst the nations? Let us skip the bein ha'amin. There's one nation, they're mefuzar, they're spread out, mefayrod, they're separate. B'chol medinas malchusecha, amongst all of your kingdoms. Why bein ha'amin? What's the significance of the words bein ha'amin? Says B'chaim Friedlander, Haman was explaining why is there peirud? Why is there a separation? Why is there fighting amongst the Jewish people? Because they're Bein Ha'amim. Because they're amongst the other nations and they're influenced by them. Because they're influenced by the other nations to be concerned and to focus on their own will and their own desires and to be selfish. That's why there's separation. They're Mufuzer and Mufayrod. Why? Why are they spread out? Why are they dispersed? Because Bein Ha'amim. Because they're amongst other nations and they're affected. They're influenced by the other nations, by the priorities of the other nations, by the desires of the other nations. And their focus is on self-fulfillment, fulfilling their own needs and fulfilling their own desires, instead of focusing on service of Hashem. And that's what brings about the payroll, that's what brings about the separation amongst the Jewish people. And perhaps that's the meaning of our pasuk as well. The pasuk says, Hashem says, I'm going to take the Jewish people, be bein ha-goyim, from amongst the nations. It doesn't say, I'm going to take the Jewish people from the lands that they went there. It's from the nations that they went there. But the Chidol explains this pasuk is telling us that the prerequisite for the Geula is achdus, to bring the Jewish people together. Hashem says that in order to bring the Jewish people together, there's one way to do that. I have to take them to Kol Amim. Get them away from the nations. As long as they're Bein Ha'amim, as long as they're amongst the other nations, then their focus is like the other nations. It's a focus on fulfilling my interests and my desires, which brings to selfishness, which brings to payroll separation. Hashem says, the first step is that I'm going to take them to Bein HaGoyim, get them away from the other nations. Get them away from that influence of the other nations, bring them back to their focus, their true focus, which is Avodas Hashem, how to conserve Hashem. Once I bring them back, once I take them away from the nations, take them away from that influence, and they go back to focusing on Avodas Hashem, then we could bring achdus, then we could bring them back together. Everyone's focused on the same goal. everyone's focused on having to serve Hashem best. When that becomes the focus, then Hashem says, then everyone can come together, can join together. Once everyone's joined together with Achdus, then we can move on to the next stage of Sisi Oisam, the Goy Echod Ba'aretz, make them into one unified nation in the land, one nation under one king, the way that the Jewish people was always meant to be, with unity and Achdus amongst the Jewish people. We see by Har Sinai, the prerequisite for the Kabbalah Satayra was what? Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar, that the Jewish people actually tells us, Ki Ish Echod B'Lev Echod, it was unity. Everyone was all together, and that was a prerequisite. Then you can have the Kabbalah Satayra. Then the Jewish people could be the Jewish people. And so too over here, Hashem says, as long as the Jewish people are amongst all the nations, they'll be influenced by them to be concerned with their own wills and their own desires. Then there's no possibility of Achdus of unity. Only once I take them from amongst all the nations, and they're no longer influenced by them, they could focus on Avodas Hashem, not be concerned with their own interests and their own desires. Then they can truly come together to serve Hashem, to focus on how to serve Hashem best. So with unity, and with unity, we can have redemption, we can bring about Goy Echod Ba'aretz, one unified nation in the land, all together under one king. We should see it soon in our days.
Yes, you do.